throwing her into the wall hard enough to make an audible crunch. Varane crashed to the floor, rolling to avoid a strike from the heart lance that pierced into the stone wall near where she had knelt a moment before. Jonan turned and ran, still holding the book. He swept the door open, braving one more glance toward Varane as he exited the room. Her skin had turned inky black, blending with the dark, but the warrior that faced her stared at her with an unconcerned expression, readying the spear to strike again. He wasn't quite sure why he cared so much, but he really hoped that Varane, no, Rialla Dianis, made it out of that room alive. That thought didn't slow his steps, however, as he rushed aimlessly down the hall. "I don't know the layout here at all," he realized. "I'm lost, and also I'm pretty sure Varane just used thought sorcery on me again, and she's probably going to die and thresh it all." He rounded a corner and nearly slammed directly into a door that was much larger than the others. The wood was framed with gold, and a symbol of a harp was inscribed on a metal plate in the front of the door. The queen's room, Jonan realized. She'd better have a window. He tried the knob, finding it locked, and grimaced. Of course it's locked. It's the rushing queen's room. This is a bad idea, he told himself, raising his right hand to the lock. Down the hall, he thought he could still hear the sounds of metal striking against something else, possibly Varane's odd icy weapon. He called flame, blasting a hole twice the size of his fist in the door, right over the lock. With that obstacle removed, he kicked hard, smashing the door open. Without pausing a moment, he reached into his pouch and withdrew the rope, accidentally knocking a vial on the floor as he did. It didn't shatter, so he ignored the vial and stepped inside. The room was grand, opulent, with a titanic bed that dwarfed even the one in Adon's room. An actual harp sat beside it, but neither the bed nor the harp had any user present. A second glance as Jonan stepped inside told him that the room was, thankfully, currently unoccupied. But he did find one other thing of note. On the opposite end of the room, there was a writing desk with neatly folded papers. Against the wall above the desk was a gold-framed mirror, the metal surrounding it shaped into elegant vines. A familiar mirror, as Jonan had prepared it before he had left Sullyr, giving it to his superiors to provide it to his contact. A piece of parchment was pressed against the mirror, and Jonan approached quickly and snatched it, turning the paper to face him. "Have not received report in days. Need status update. Prisoner walks the paths of ascension tomorrow. Need to strike now." "Oh, Resh, my contact is the gods-cursed Queen Regent of Orlin." A loud crash sounded in the hall near the door, and Jonan dropped the paper instantly. There was, fortunately, a window, and a large one. He shoved the window's locking mechanism out of place and flung the shutters wide, and then rushed to attach his rope to the metal frame of the nearby bed. "I really, really hate this part of the job," Jonan considered, tossing the remainder of the rope down the side of the building. After a moment of testing to make sure the rope was secure, he wrapped a length around his waist, tied it securely, and began the climb to dubious freedom. Chapter 13 Paths of Ascension. Talion woke to the faint sound of knocking at the heavy door to his guest bedroom. He grabbed the sakes from within his sheets, sat up, and walked half unclad to open the door. A young man in servant's garb stood on the other side.
"Good day, sir. I am here to bring you to Adon. Long may he watch over us, who stands at the paths of ascension."
"Sure," Talion replied, resting the sword at his side. "Give me a few minutes to dress myself." The servant nodded vehemently, and Talion closed the door. He didn't understand why the locals seemed to make such a big deal about garb, but he found their embarrassment amusing. Talion had spent the last 3 days recovering, practicing swordplay with Landon, and enjoying the hospitality of the palace. His leg wound from the Asharan was in substantially better shape, but his cauterized burn still ached madly, especially just after he awakened. He rubbed at the flesh around it, but that only made the aching worse. "I probably should be waiting longer before taking such an important test, but if Adon is going to give me the chance today, I can't pass it up. There's no telling when he'll change his mind. or how many new injuries I'll accumulate from any additional surprises in store here. A few minutes later, Talion emerged from the room, wearing the borrowed clothes that Adon had instructed him to wear on this day. He had a long black tunic trimmed with silver, plain black breeches, and black leather boots with a silver pattern painted on their surface. Presumably a reference to Eindarin, the god of swords, since those are his colors. Even here people associate me with him. I can never seem to escape his shadow. Still, he couldn't complain too much. The boots fit surprisingly well, given that the cobbler had only taken his measurements the previous day. I wonder if these painted symbols are purely decorative, or if I'm walking around wearing some kind of latent sorcerer's trap. I suppose I'll find out soon enough. Talion belted on the sakes, spent a few moments adjusting the position of the scabbard, and then another handful of moments debating if he was missing anything. A secondary weapon would probably be wise. There were no other weapons he was aware of in his chamber, so he went out to meet with his servant. He'd have to look for a secondary weapon later. The servant led Talion down 3 flights of stairs, which was interesting, given that he was pretty sure he had started out on the 3rd floor, and to a gold-etched wooden door. "This is the entrance to the Paths of Ascension?" Talion asked.
"The entrance itself is inside this room, my lord. I am not permitted to go inside, but Adon should be awaiting you. May the gods watch over you, my lord,"
the servant said, bowing deeply. He sounded like he actually meant it. "Thank you," Talion said, suppressing a frown. "I hope they're not watching too carefully. If they are, their inaction would disgust me." Talion put a hand on the door handle as the servant scurried away. Taking a deep breath, he pulled the doors open. The chamber beyond looked to be too large to be inside the palace. It was nearly as long as the arena had been, and that was a grand enough area to seat thousands. The floor was gray stone, with a single broad purple carpet leading straight across the room from where he was standing. Along the carpeted path were titanic marble pillars reaching skyward toward the ceiling of the keep itself. "That explains the size to some extent," Talion considered. "This room must occupy space on every level of the keep." He glanced around to see if there were any entrances along the walls higher up in the room, but he could not find any. He did, however, find Adon. The so-called god stood at the very end of the path, on the right side of the carpet. He was wearing similar robes to the ones Talion had seen before, although these were blue-trimmed with silver. He wasn't sure if that had any significance. Those were Cytera's colors, but it seemed odd for Adon to be wearing them. He was also still wearing the same ring he had been at dinner, and Talion thought he saw a flicker of some kind of blue light inside it. "Some sort of dominion-bonded item," Talion quickly concluded. "Interesting." Across from Adon was Myros, or someone dressed as Myros, at least. The figure was in full armor, including a helmet, and standing on the left side of the path with the heartlance in hand. A long sword sat on their hip, a new addition.
"Interesting. 2 weapons indicates a level of preparation for a fight. Are they going to make me fight Myros again? Is that what this is about?"
A grin crossed his face at the thought.
"This is the shorter Myros," he noted after a moment. "The one I fought in the arena. I might have an actual fight on my hands."
Talion shut the door behind him, taking a casual stride as he walked toward the pair of gods waiting for him at the end of the carpet.
"They could both attack me at once. That might be a problem. Adon can dispel sorcery, which removes one of my primary advantages, and Myros is both faster and stronger than I am, at least in short bursts. If that's a result of motion sorcery, though, Adon's spell to remove sorcery might counter Myros' physical advantage as well."
He arrived at the end of the carpet, the pair hushing a conversation as he approached.
"So I'm here. What is this all about?"
"A broad question," Adon said with a fatherly smile. "But I assume you are asking about the tests you will need to take."
Adon gestured to a series of steps beyond the end of the carpet, which led downward toward another large door. It was massive, at least 20 feet tall, and made of solid metal. Some kind of writing was etched on the surface, but Talion couldn't recognize it at a distance. The area in front of the door itself was a circular platform of white marble, 12 feet below the rest of the room. 6 poles carrying lit lanterns were distributed around the ring, illuminating a series of intricate glyphs carved into the floor. Oh, mysterious runic markings. Those are always fun.
That is the entrance to the Paths of Ascension. It is the place where each of us goes to be judged worthy for godhood. Myros, Tylan, Vorain, and I have all walked it, and each of us retrieved something from within. That will be your task.
I take it I couldn't just cut a piece of rock out of the wall and say I retrieved something. Talion smirked at the thought, but it seemed a valid question. There was no reason to strain himself against untold terrors if his instructions were that vague.
Adon shook his head.
No, but a clever thought. I will tell you in honesty that this will be no simple task, and it will not be without danger. The Paths of Ascension proved challenging to each of us, and I trust that you will be no exception. Once inside, you must retrieve an ancient artifact, and it will serve as the source of your power as a newborn god.
Talion raised an eyebrow. An artifact? What did that have to do with divinity? Isn't an artifact just another term for a powerful dominion-bonded object? He stepped forward, getting a closer look at the doors, and finally recognizing the inscriptions. They weren't the strange runes he had found around the Asharan. They were much more familiar.
Zixion,
Talion muttered. The doors say something about, until our master returns. This is a vault. A Zixion vault.
Myros seemed to stiffen at that statement, but Adon just waved a hand dismissively. You're right, of course. The Paths of Ascension are just a name people of this city gave it after we took it over. The artifacts were wrought with old sorcery, the type that predated human understanding, at least until recently.
You figured out what makes them work, Talion concluded. It made a certain level of sense. But the people of Zixis took precautions, and their artifacts are well protected.
Adon nodded.
That's the light of it, yes. Even with our extensive study of the first artifacts we found, we've barely brushed the surface of what these objects might be capable of. Myros and I have both made multiple incursions into that place, but each journey carries a real chance of death even for us. It was designed to ward off anyone other than Vyrek Sul, the Emperor of Zixis, who is supposed to reclaim the treasures inside when he returns. The deeper you go, the greater the treasures within, and the more deadly the traps. Some of the traps even seem to change.
He's essentially admitting that he's not a god. That's odd. From what I had heard about him, I'd expected pulling that truth out of him to be much more of a struggle.
So what you're really offering me is a title, that you'll claim I'm a god like you are if I bring you an artifact,
Talion said, narrowing his eyes.
Adon shook his head.
You misunderstand. My offer was earnest. These artifacts have vast power, capabilities that no other living beings today can emulate. Myros and I are gods, Talion. In every meaningful way. We watch over our citizens, we protect them, and we even give a chosen few our gifts, just as the other gods claim to. I can offer the people of Orlan anything the older gods can, and I give it freely, without asking for anything in return, not even worship. I have no priests, no paladins to protect me.
Talion folded his arms, considering. Is that what it is to be a god? Just a source of power and protection? Is that what I want for myself? What exactly did I think I was asking him for before? Did I just want to be more like Eindarin? More like what people have always expected me to be?
Something about what Adon was saying scratched at the back of his mind.
It sounded pretty enough on the surface, but he knew there was something off about it. Something missing. "You said the traps sometimes change. How is that possible?" Talion asked. Adon folded his hands in front of him.
"That is the core problem. We don't know. Presumably something is alive down there."
Alive? Could something have survived down there hundreds of years after the fall of Zixis? Talion tensed, his hand unconsciously drifting to the hilt of his sword. He only realized his action when Myros shifted, making the same motion. "What sort of traps are we talking about?" A booming voice issued from Myros's helmet, no doubt augmented by some kind of sorcery within.
"Spears emerge from the walls. One of the rooms fills with cold water. Another has statues that breathe fire."
Adon quirked a brow at Myros.
"I hadn't heard about that last one. Something from a recent visit?"
Myros nodded silently. Adon turned back to Talion.
"Myros visits the paths much more frequently than I do. On my second visit, whatever controls that place, presumably an ancient Asharan sorcerer, attempted to seal me inside a room. The properties of the stone in the walls inhibit certain types of sorcery, and I barely managed to escape with my life."
A fascinating confession, and another admission of mortal weakness. Oddly, it just makes me more sympathetic to him, though. Perhaps that's part of his strategy. "Why are you telling me so much about this? I mean, if I lived through this, I could tell anyone that you're just using Asharan artifacts to emulate divine power." Talion shifted in his stance, moving his hand away from his sword. Adon sighed.
"You still don't see, do you? I want you to succeed. I want as many people as possible to succeed in here, and otherwise in the world as a whole. I want humanity to succeed. You could argue that my claim to godhood is false. You could explain what you've just heard to everyone in the city. What would that accomplish? I am not giving anyone false hope. I can deliver every promise I make. I have the tools to do more for humanity than any god ever has, and as my knowledge grows, my ability to help others expands further. Would you truly wish to undermine that?"
Talion shook his head. "I suppose not. Your goal seems noble enough, and I respect that. I will say, though, that the people of the city would probably think of you differently if they knew your definition of divinity and the mechanism behind it. I think you know that, too, and that you've been deliberately avoiding making your methodology public. But I won't speak out against you for it, at least not until I've had a chance to learn more. I don't like that you're keeping information from your followers, but I'll give you a chance to see if you're doing more good than harm." Adon nodded.
"Thank you. That's all I can ask. If you survive the vault, I will tell you more about why I have chosen this path, and how my abilities function."
True divinity or not, Adon was offering him a chance to test himself against a place of terrible danger for a chance at an artifact. He would have taken that chance without any prior promise of godhood. The challenge itself was a sufficient reward. "Sounds fun," Talion concluded. "When do we get started?"
"Are you fully prepared? Do you need any other supplies? Again, I want you to succeed at this."
Adon gestured at the door. Talion shifted his weight to his right foot, considering. "If there's something alive down there, I'm probably in for a fight. Probably with another Asharan. I really should ask about that one that was in the bank when I get out of here. Nothing he just explained justifies what was going on there. Resh, he really is a good speaker." "I could use an extra sword, actually," Talion said. Myros wordlessly drew the long sword and tossed it to Talion, which he snatched by the blade, narrowly avoiding the edge. "Thanks," he said, nodding to Myros. The armored warrior returned his nod.
"Out of curiosity, why would the bearer of the Sekes need another weapon?"
Adon asked, tilting his head to the side. "I try not to use it," Talion explained, patting the hilt. The sword was in its true form. There was no longer a need to hide it now that everyone had seen it in the arena. "It's too deadly." Miros nodded in understanding, but Adon furrowed his brow in apparent confusion.
Well, I suppose I can't begrudge you a second weapon. You may also want to bring a torch. It can get very dark inside. And as I said, something in the walls suppresses some types of sorcery, especially deep inside.
Do you want me to bring you a sample of the walls? Talion asked with a grin, remembering his earlier joke about bringing a rock as his sign that he had succeeded at the test. Adon shook his head.
No, we've tried that. Once the rock leaves the paths, it seems to lose whatever property suppresses sorcery. Unfortunate, given how useful that material could be if properly harnessed.
Miros turned and walked to one of the pillars, removing an unlit lantern from a ring on the side.
Here,
Miros offered, voice still unnaturally booming from the helmet. Talion took the lantern in his left hand, gripping Miros' sword in his right.
Thanks. I seem to be out of hands, so I think I'm ready to head inside.
You're certain? You don't need any further preparations?
Adon asked, sounding nervous.
Not unless you want to loan me Miros, Talion said, smirking.
Adon chuckled lightly.
After a moment, he muttered,
No, that would be unwise. Last time we sent in two people at once, it did not end well.
Well, that's foreboding. I'll have to ask about that later.
Then I think I'm as ready as I'm going to be, Talion explained. Wish me luck.
Good luck,
Adon said, sounding sincere. Miros muttered something that was nearly inaudible in spite of the sound-enhancing helmet. It sounded like, keep you healthy. Talion nodded to both of the so-called gods, ignited the candle inside his lantern with a stray thought, and strode to the metal doors. I probably shouldn't waste my strength, Talion considered as he pressed his hand against the metal. But I can't resist a chance to show off just a little.
Open.
A tall rectangle of metal stretched open, making room for Talion to step inside and revealing a glimmering surface barring the way into a dim chamber beyond. Carefully, he took a step closer and brushed his fingers against the surface of the barrier, bringing back a wet hand a moment later. Thin lines of water began to flow out of the chamber where his fingertips had brushed the surface. That whole room is underwater, he realized, grimacing. This is going to be less than fun. He glanced back toward Miros and Adon, but they only stared silently down at him from the carpeted area above the rune-etched platform.
It's leaking now, which means maybe I could drain the water out of that entire room eventually, but something tells me Adon wouldn't be happy about that.
Now aware of the water, Talion pushed a hand deeper inside, testing for any more surprises. The water was cold, but not freezing. He had gone diving in worse conditions near Liadra. Water flowed freely across his arm now, soaking his shirt. He took a deep breath and stuck his head inside, hoping to glance around and establish the location of an exit, but the interior of the room was unlit. Withdrawing briefly, the swordsman took a final deep breath and plunged himself completely inside.
This isn't nearly the kind of fun I was hoping for, Talion considered as the water chilled his skin.
Once inside the doorway, he was forced to fight pressure that pushed outward toward the opening he had created. The casing on his lantern shattered almost immediately, water filling the cage and banishing his only source of light aside from the doorway below. He planted his feet as best he could against the floor and pushed upward, trying to shove himself above the water level. He raised his sword arm, hoping the blade would collide with the ceiling and give him warning to prevent him from hitting his head. Talion's initial push was insufficient to take him to the ceiling, but he resisted the downward pull and continued to swim upward for what felt like minutes. His lungs were burning when he felt his blade impact with something, and he slowed his fervent kicking, his head emerging from the liquid a moment later. There was barely any room to breathe at the top of the chamber, and still no visible source of light. He considered dropping the lantern, but he hoped that the metal inlay had held the candle in position. If it had, he could still potentially relight it in another room, even without the glass. Taking several moments just to breathe, Talion began to feel his way along the ceiling, attempting to find his way toward any sort of alternate exit from the room. He noted that the downward suction appeared to have stopped, and a glance downward showed him only blackness. Had his entrance closed? Adon might have sealed me in here, he realized, either to kill me, or maybe just to prevent the water from ruining his pretty purple carpet. Or, of course, whatever lives inside here might have shut the way out. A moment after having that thought, Talion felt something solid coil around his left leg. Oh, Resh, I had to think about that, didn't I? The coil yanked, dragging Talion under the water. Talion lashed out with his borrowed sword, striking for whatever had encircled his leg. His attack was impeded by the water's resistance, but he still connected solidly against something with the consistency of stone. The sword vibrated in his hand, and a second coil wrapped around his right leg, dragging him downward faster. This is not how I want to die, he told himself. He swung his sword again, but the strike was equally ineffective. Releasing his grip on the sword, he grit his teeth and reached out for whatever was dragging him downward. His hand felt something smooth and solid, and he felt the dominion of stone tingling in the back of his mind. Stone was one of the two prime dominions that connected to metal, but he had never had the talent to properly utilize it. Now seemed like a good time to start. Break, he told the stone, but there was no reply. Fine, if you're going to be like that, we'll do this the hard way. Talion tightened his grip around the stone tendril and pulled upward. For an instant, he felt his movement downward slow, and he grinned against his pain, releasing the lantern from his other hand. His left hand joined the right, and he slid them across the stone tendril, seeking a weak point. He couldn't picture the stone as easily in his mind as he could with metal, but he found a crack with his fingers. You're going to break now, he told the stone, and he heaved with both of his hands. The tendril snapped, and Talion surged upward, the second tendril going slack as the first one shattered. Talion's shoulder bumped something. His lantern, he realized after a moment, as he floated upward, and he snagged it with his offhand as he made his way back to the surface. Fortunate I didn't bump into Miros' sword, he realized, as his head broke through the water. He took several panting breaths, realizing that whatever had grabbed him, made of stone or not, could probably do it again. Was that a monster or a trap? More likely the former, given that it went slack when I broke off a piece of it. But how could a monster be made of stone? He thought back to stories of creatures from the dominions themselves. Could there be a beast native to the Dominion of Stone living in these waters? It seemed unnatural. Not only were natives to the dominions rarely found in the mortal world, but it seemed strange that one could survive while immersed in a completely different dominion. He dismissed his speculation for the moment. He had more important things to consider. He touched the ceiling again, finding protrusions of stone that he could use as handholds if something grabbed him again. Slowly, he made his way across the room, with no clear idea of his direction or destination. As time wore on, he considered lifting his lantern above the water to relight it, but the water level was so high that he doubted he would get more than a few moments of light before it was immersed again. The tax on his body was not worth the brief illumination it would provide, at least for now. After what felt like at least an hour, his knee bumped into something hard. He winced, but rejoiced at the same time. It was a hard, flat surface. His right hand reached out, finding another wall, hopefully the opposite wall. Once there, he shifted to moving his right hand across the surface, floating along the wall while he searched for any sign of light. Instead, after several minutes, he found a large gap, a rectangular hole perhaps a few feet high, and above the waterline. Talion reached into the space, finding it perfectly flat and apparently empty, at least as far as his arm could reach. Judging that sufficient, he set the lantern inside and steadied himself with his right arm. Ignite! He instructed the Dominion of Flame, creating a tiny flicker of fire inside the lantern, just sufficient to reveal that the candle was no longer inside. Oh, this just gets better and better. Talion sighed, casting the useless lantern back into the water behind him, and crawled into the stone space. This would be a really bad time for those spears Miros was talking about to come out of the walls, Talion considered. I really need light. He considered two options. He could flood the necessary strength into the Sekhes to make the blue gemstone on the pommel glow, or he could try to maintain a fire with the Dominion of Flame. Either would tax him greatly, but the former would require him to move the sword out in front of him to be of significant use, and he wasn't willing to risk losing the weapon the way he had lost Miros's sword. Gritting his teeth, Talion reached out in front of him and called the Dominion of Flame. A warm light formed in his palm, and he shined it against the walls, looking for any holes that looked likely to hold spears. When he found none, he crawled in further, noting that turning around would be impossible in the cramped confines he was pushing himself into. If he had to leave, he'd be forced to push himself backward, which would be an arduous process. Talion continued to crawl, finding that the space extended into a long tunnel that arched subtly upward. I wonder if this is where the water poured into the room from, Talion considered. If so, another torrent of water, or worse, could come down this way at any time. Not relishing the thought of being stuck in the tunnel while water washed through it, Talion crawled his way through as fast as he could, maintaining the sphere of flame in his hand, dried his sleeves, but the chill that came over his body from expending his body heat only made the contrast to his soaking clothes more prominent. The conjured flame flickered and dimmed as he progressed, seemingly faster than it should have. He drew harder on the Dominion, expending more of his own body heat to maintain the necessary illumination to continue. There's that sorcery suppression they were talking about, he realized. It's going to get worse as I get deeper. His body was shivering uncontrollably when he caught the sight of another source of light ahead, a green light signifying the exit to the tunnel. He pushed himself forward, extinguishing his own flame immediately, and paused just at the edge of the entrance to the new chamber. A scythe-like blade of metal swept over the exit of the tunnel, nearly brushing against Talion's hair. Really glad I stopped there, Talion considered, just as a spear flashed from across the room toward where Talion was still crouched inside the tunnel. His right hand caught the spear just before it smashed into his body, the force of the impact carrying the point of the spear to just in front of his face. A second later, the scythe swept over the entrance again, smashing the wooden shaft of the spear. Talion pondered the amputated spearhead in his hand, flipping it around in his grip. Zixis apparently took their vaults very seriously. A glint of metal signified a second spear launching toward Talion, but he was ready this time. He hurled his spearhead out of the tunnel, catching the incoming spear head-on and knocking it backward to tumble to the floor. As the scythe swept past a moment later, Talion kicked off of the floor of the tunnel, launching himself into the room. Half a dozen steel blades launched from the wall to his right. Without so much as a thought, Talion ripped the scabbard off his belt, spinning the still-sheathed Sekhes and deflecting five of the blades, then catching the sixth in his left hand. He was no longer shivering when he took his next step forward. He was in battle. His body had no more room for weakness. Another scythe swept out at neck level from the wall behind him, but Talion caught it on the blade he had snatched out of the air. The scythe's mechanism pushed hard enough to carry Talion backward, nearly pushing him into the trajectory of the second scythe near the tunnel entrance. Talion growled, tightening his grip on the trap blade, and felt the metal inside connecting with the scythe. Every structural weakness within the ancient scythe flashed in his mind, and he swept upward with the Sekhes's scabbard. The metal lining on the scabbard smashed into the weak point, shattering the scythe apart, and Talion ducked to avoid the remnants of the weapon as it swept by. For several moments, the only sound was the other scythe sweeping behind him, nearly close enough to draw blood. "Is that all?" Talion muttered. "I thought this was supposed to be a challenge." Discarding the borrowed blade in his left hand, Talion wrapped his now broken belt back around his waist. After a few moments, he managed to tie a knot to get it to sit on his waist, and he glanced around the room to try to find the source of the green light. He found an open doorway about 10 feet beyond him, nearly directly across from his tunnel, the green shimmering from somewhere beyond. Shaking out his wet hair, Talion stepped forward toward the light. As he approached, Talion inspected the chamber beyond. It was much larger than the room he stood within, and in the distance he could see the glittering of metal objects lined against a wall. Toward the center, directly across from where he stood, was a raised pedestal, and on it, a bright green gemstone, shining with the light that illuminated both rooms. "I think I found what I'm here for," Talion considered with a smirk. "At least for my first trip." It was only after Talion stepped into the doorway that he saw the chains. A colossal figure appeared from beyond the pedestal. A wall of shadows and glittering metal, only humanoid in the vaguest of senses. It stood half again Talion's height, and its body seemed composed of solid darkness, save for long, bladed metal claws on its four front appendages. Its head resembled something that might have been on a huge insect, if the insect had been born in the nightmares of a madman. A long chain bound the creature around the waist, and that chain was attached directly to the pedestal carrying the gemstone. Talion took an involuntary step back. He had heard of creatures like this before, beasts from the dominion of Shadow itself. They had been bound by the sorcerers of Zixis to be used as weapons in battle, and each one was said to be capable of fighting 100 men at a time. He stood before a harvester of shadows, one of the most dangerous creatures of legend. His hand darted to the hilt of his sword as the creature vanished, appearing right in front of him. The harvester's bladed claws flashed through the air, and Talion didn't even attempt to parry. The monster was just too large. He stepped backward, awkwardly, barely avoiding the strike as it scraped against the stone doorway. Talion tensed for another attack, but the creature came no further. "The chains," he realized. The metal chains that were bound around the harvester's waist glittered in the green light, and he realized that they had an inscription, too tiny to read, across the entire surface of each ring. They prevent it from leaving the room. His first instinct was to draw his sword and strike. With the legendary sword of the gods of the Taos Pantheon, perhaps he could land a telling blow, even against such a powerful monster. It was bound to the room, which would limit its angles of attack, although he judged that its reach still exceeded his, even with the sword. He would have to be fast. He released his grip on the sword. "No," he told himself. "I will not kill another prisoner. But neither will I be enough of a fool to let it free." Talion charged. The creature swept its claws at him in a broad strike, just as he had predicted. Talion dropped and rolled under the strike, pushing himself back to his feet in an instant. He sprinted toward the gem, but the creature reappeared directly in front of him. Resh! The claws flashed toward him, and his feet were too slow. He had no alternative. The Sakes flashed into his hand, four runes glowing blue on the surface as he parried the strike. Sparks flickered as the claws impacted against the surface, the force of the blow carrying Talion back several feet. He kept his footing, barely, and stared the harvester down. To his surprise, the creature paused, lowering its head. A moment later, it opened its maw impossibly wide, revealing a glittering row of teeth as long as Talion's arm. The harvester made a cackling noise and vanished. Talion spun to find the creature immediately, but he didn't parry this time. "Chain," he told the sword. The blade shifted into a length of gleaming metal chain, and he swept it outward, wrapping it around the incoming claw. As the claw approached, Talion jumped backward, merging the Sakes chains together into a solid cable and yanking backward. The harvester struggled, pulling Talion forward with strength that exceeded his own, but that was fine. He didn't need to be stronger than the harvester. Only the sword did. As the harvester dragged him in, he launched himself past it, flipping the sword over. "Wings into blades," he commanded, and the wings of the hilt shifted into dagger-like protrusions. He shoved them straight into the stone floor. "Spread," he commanded, and the daggers embedded in the floor branched outward, creating flat surfaces of metal parallel to the stone. Talion danced backward as the creature spun and lashed out with another claw, and then struggled as the new chains from the sword pinned it just out of reach. The creature emitted a loud, guttural growl, straining against its bonds. Talion circled around it at a careful distance, with his own chains binding it from moving more than a few feet, and the other set of chains limiting its ability to move away from the pedestal. Talion approached the pedestal hastily, only taking a brief glance at the other objects lined against the wall. There were swords, spears, and daggers of metals, and even types of stone he wasn't even sure he recognized. He noted a golden crown with a ruby set in the center, aside some sort of wooden scepter. They were undoubtedly all of great value, but the gem was the most obvious object of value in this room, and the longer he stayed, the more danger he would be exposed to. It would be a shame not to grab at least a couple more things, he told himself. He found a long sword of a strange red metal that looked like it might fit his scabbard, sheathed it awkwardly, and hooked a silvery dagger into his belt. He didn't trust himself to be able to carry much more through the water. And, feeling satisfied with his discoveries, he grabbed the green gem with his left hand. The chains emanating from the pedestal shattered. Oh, that's... The creature ripped the Sakess out of the floor, snapping the stone apart as it rushed toward him. Talion managed to draw the red metal sword in time to parry, but the claws pushed past the weapon, ripping into Talion's left arm. He stumbled back into the pillar, dropping the green gem and lashing out with a counterstrike. The harvester batted the red sword aside effortlessly, sweeping a pair of claws toward Talion's waist level to bisect him. Noting the length of the claws, Talion stepped inward, the metal claws clashing against one another as he called the Dominion of Flame around his left hand and slammed a blazing fist into the harvester's face. The creature reeled back, emitting a hideous screeching noise as smoke rose from what was presumably a wound. Talion shuddered at the pain that shot through his injured arm at the impact, but he did not slow his movements. He grasped the metallic cords of the Sakess with his left hand, commanding the sword back into a chain. He stepped forward again, slamming the hilt of the red-bladed sword into the creature's chest as he unraveled the Sakess chain from around its claw. After a moment, the sacred blade came free, and he slashed the gleaming blade through the air, sending the creature staggering back to avoid the strike. That was all the room he needed. He sheathed the red blade and ducked right under another sweeping claw, grabbing the green gemstone and slammed a shoulder into the harvester as he rose. The creature staggered backward, feeling lighter than its size would have indicated, and he slammed the glowing gemstone straight into the creature's chest. A flash of light nearly blinded Talion, and another trail of smoke issued from the creature's body as it fell backward. Talion shoved past it, prepared to block another strike using the Sakess, but it never came. The creature vanished, and after a moment of panic, Talion realized it had not reappeared within the room. Good, he told himself. I don't think I injured it too badly. It should live. On one level, he knew it seemed nonsensical to care about the survival of a creature that had just attempted to bisect him, but he needed it to live. He needed to be able to fight without killing. With the gem in his right hand and the Sakess in his left, he strode through the trap room. The claw marks on his left arm burned, and he could feel the Sakess drawing at his strength every moment it was drawn, but he didn't care. He had a light source, he had protection, and he knew the way out. The scythe-like blade guarding the entrance to the tunnel swept in front of him, and he stuck the Sakess out. The scythe parted like paper as it impacted with his blade, veering off to strike a stone wall on one of the sides of the room. Talion smirked as he shivered, climbing into the tunnel. The next several minutes were agonizing. Brushing up against the wall of the tunnel sent jolts of fresh pain through his injured arm, and every push seemed to threaten to drain away the rest of his remaining strength. The tunnel was angled downward now, at least, which made progress somewhat faster. It was almost refreshing when his hand brushed the surface of the water from the first room. Almost. The chill from the liquid was overwhelming. He shuddered, pushing himself into the water in spite of his growing weariness, and shined the gemstone into the water to find the entrance doors. He spotted the massive metal doors across the room, so far that he could scarcely believe he had made the swim before, and a second and third set of doors near the bottom of the pool. He ignored the additional doors, groggily swimming, using only his legs, his hands still gripped tightly around his sword and gem. The water felt soothing against the burning of his wounds, but it nevertheless drained at his strength further. The once brilliant light of his blade had faded to near invisibility. By the time he reached the opposite wall, he could barely keep his legs moving. He didn't swim downward. He simply held his breath and sank. When he reached the metal door, his blade flashed outward, carving a gaping hole. Pressure did most of the rest of the work, pushing him against the wall. He simply had to cut the hole wider and then fit himself through. He had forgotten how far the top of the door was from the ground. The water pushed him outside the vault, and Talion fell more than 10 feet before slamming into another pool of water, the water that had collected from the breaches he had created in the barrier after opening the door. The pool barely cushioned his fall, but it prevented him from slamming directly into the stone floor. The impact drove the last air out of his lungs, forcing the glowing stone from his grasp. For a moment, Talion was insensate, and then strong arms pulled him from the water. His vision was a blur at first, and then Miros's helmeted head was looming above him. Miros held the green gem in a hand and stretched it out, placing it in Talion's hand.
"I think you earned this," came the booming voice.
Talion gave a weak smile, grasping the gem with what was left of his flagging strength.
"Thanks," he managed to stammer before breaking into a series of coughs.
Miros dragged him to his feet, and he barely managed to keep himself from falling back down.
"How embarrassing."
Adon hovered nearby, smiling.
"You've done very well, Talion. Just as I had hoped. Now, hand me the gem, and we'll see about giving you godhood, as you deserve."
Talion wiped the water out of his eyes, and then groggily reached out his hand, offering the gemstone to Adon.
"Here," he said. "Take it."
Adon stepped forward with an outstretched hand, but Miros stepped in between the two of them, raising the heart lance.
"Don't give it to him yet. He has some questions to answer first," Miros demanded.
"What?" Talion shook his head, trying to regain his focus, but he was so tired. With a jolt, he realized he was still clutching the Sekhes in a death grip in his left hand, and only one rune on the surface was still lit.
"Oh, gods!"
He fumbled with the new sword in his scabbard, unsheathing it and discarding it onto the floor, and noting that the silver dagger had been lost at some point, presumably during the swim. He sheathed the Sekhes immediately thereafter, feeling its drain on his strength cease, but regaining none of the energy it had already stolen from him.
"What's this about, Miros?"
Adon asked, his question mirroring Talion's bleary thoughts.
"Is there a problem?"
"There might be," Miros said. "Someone visited me last night. That someone claimed you've been sacrificing Rethri for immortality."
"Oh, the Rethri. I knew I was forgetting something important. Guess Joan and our Lydia has been busy."
Adon quirked a brow.
"That's quite a claim. And absurd. I do have Rethri guests in the city, as you already know. But they're here of their own volition. Sacrificing people for immortality? That's nonsense."
"See, that's what I thought, until I read the journal they gave me. I didn't read it quite the way they did. I don't think you're doing ritual sacrifices. I think you've been using the Rethri as test subjects for making some kind of dominion bonds, and telling the Rethri it's for their benefit. And you're killing them with your tests."
Miros shifted the Heartlands into a combat stance, preparing to strike. Adon frowned, looking down.
"It's not like that,"
he mumbled.
"I never wanted anyone to die. I just need to understand how they work. Without research, without testing, I'll never know enough."
Miros stood a little straighter, and Talion shuffled the gemstone to his left hand, moving his right to the hilt of the Sakess. This is a really bad time for a fight, at least for me.
So you admit it, then? You've been killing people with your tests?
Miros sounded shocked, perhaps even a bit sad, but it was difficult to judge with the sound augmentation from the helmet.
It's more complicated than that, Adon insisted. I've been testing on people who are already ill. Sometimes those tests are too strenuous for people in their condition. I had hoped to be able to save everyone, but my progress has been too slow. I've had my failures, I admit that, but I'll figure out how to cure them soon. It will be a net positive on lives. I will save more than I lose,
Miros growled, taking a step forward.
And do these people know you've been risking their lives?
The ones who are conscious, yes,
Adon replied, shaking his head.
The others were brought by their families. Families that needed hope and had nowhere else to turn. They needed something miraculous. Divine intervention.
Talion wearily lifted a hand and pointed at Adon.
That might be true for some. But what about the Asharin you were keeping under the bank?
Adon spun toward Talion, raising a clenched fist.
You! You're the one! I should have known. That Asharin, like all Asharin, was a monster. It deserved no better, and I was making valuable progress with my studies on it.
It, Talion pointed out, was a him. A living, sentient creature, not an object for your studies. If you were really just taking volunteers, I'd think about helping you, even if there were risks. What you were doing to that Asharin wasn't research. It was torture. Taking notes on torture does not make it research.
Miros looked at Talion, then back to Adon.
You had an Asharin prisoner? And you didn't think that was worth mentioning to the rest of us? You're fixating on the wrong things, Miros. Calm down. I'm sure you don't tell me every little thing that happens in your day. Where would you be if I hadn't found you? Still in Valeria, playing politics with petty nobles? I gave you a part in something greater, a purpose. That's the same thing I'm doing for these test subjects.
He was no longer stumbling over his words. He had raised his voice nearly to yelling. Miros set the Heartlance against the floor.
You're right about one thing. I wasn't much of anything back at home. You taught me a lot, and I'm grateful for that. I really am. But there's no excuse for torture and taking lives. And if you've been lying about that, I can't trust that you haven't been lying about anything. Or everything else. If you're not satisfied with my progress, or my methods, help me. If you turn on me, you're just throwing away all the progress that I made from their sacrifices. Help me. We can finish my research. We can make things better,
Adon offered.
I nearly killed someone last night because of your lies. I nearly killed Talion a few weeks before. Again, because of your lies. I will have no further part in this, and neither will you. You will answer for your crimes.
Miros raised the Heartlance.
Surrender now, and I will turn you over to the Queen for judgment. Talion, are you with me?
Talion nodded to Miros immediately, plucking the red-bladed sword from the floor and stepping behind Adon. He put the sword at Adon's back. Adon quirked a brow.
If you were going to try to make a coup, it would have been smarter to do it before Talion walked the path. Do you really want to do this, Miros?
If I had done this before, Talion wouldn't have had the gem. I've been down there more often than you have. I know how the vault works. I knew he'd find it, and I know what it does,
Miros explained.
Well, Adon said, that's comforting. That you had a plan, at least. Unfortunately, I must decline to surrender.
Talion tensed. This wasn't what he wanted, but he was too tired to argue. He was too tired to do much of anything, and he was certainly too tired to fight.
Hope Miros plans to do all the heavy lifting for this one,
Talion considered.
Now!
Miros signaled, shifting to a blur of movement as the Heartlance shot forward. Adon sidestepped, seeming to know the trajectory of Miros's attack before it occurred, and Talion was forced to parry the spear himself. He lashed out with the red-bladed sword, but the attack was far too slow. Adon danced to the side, grabbing the heart lance's shaft and snapping his fingers. Myros vanished in a flash of blue, leaving the heart lance in Adon's hands.
Sad, really. I always liked Myros.
Adon spun the spear playfully.
You, I have less of an investment in, and you seem to have made your choice. Eru volar Centaurus!
Talion struggled to raise his sword as a blast of blue-white emerged from Adon's hand, encompassing Talion's entire body, and his vision went white. Chapter 14 Forging Divinity. Earlier in the morning of Talion's trial, Lydia and Istvan had escorted the caravan the rest of the way to Coldridge, where they had found Sethridge waiting for them with a second contingent of guards. Istvan and Sethridge seemed unsurprised to see each other, indicating to Lydia that this was part of their plan.
Seems Sethridge has chosen his side too.
Istvan insisted on staying with Sethridge and escorting the caravan the rest of the way to Sullier to avoid any further complications. Lydia spent the night in Coldridge and then headed back to Orlan on her own. The sorceress arrived at the city gates after nightfall, so she returned to her own quarters and slept there, heading to Jonan's house the following morning. Lydia knocked at the door politely, hand resting on the hilt of her sword. Her comprehensive barrier was already active, just in case Jonan had decided to change his allegiance in the last few days. After 2 minutes without a reply, Lydia knocked again, louder this time. After another 2 minutes, she unsheathed her saber and opened the unlocked door. It was immediately evident that the house had been ransacked. Nothing was where it should have been, and the glassware that had sat on the table near the kitchen had been shattered. This wasn't a robbery. The level of disarray was too deliberate. This was someone sending a message.
"Dominion of knowledge, illuminate that which is touched by your cousins," Lydia spoke,
and a green flicker illuminated the shattered fragments of several scattered pieces of glasswork. The faint signature of Dominion sorcery was already fading. Breaking the pieces of glass had apparently weakened their bond, which, by Jonan's admission, was never particularly stable.
"Jonan, are you inside?"
She advanced into the building, weapons still drawn.
"I could cast another spell to reveal invisible figures, but it's probably not worth giving myself a headache. It's not likely anyone is still present. This place could have been sacked any time in the last few days. If someone wants to attack me, their first attack is going to bounce right off my barrier, and then I'll counterattack as needed."
She scoured the house, finding more damaged glasswork and signs that the home had been hastily abandoned.
"The food is starting to smell, which is a pretty good indication that Jonan hadn't been here recently. He's too finicky to tolerate anything decomposing in his house."
There were no signs of blood, no signs of combat, but she did find a rug in his bedroom that seemed slightly out of place. She moved it, checking beneath for any telltale signs of battle, but there was nothing visibly amiss.
"Odd,"
she considered, but she moved the rug back to its proper place and exited the building.
"I'll have to get back to the High Palace and warn Talion that Jonan has been discovered. After that, I suppose I'll report to the Queen."
A grimace appeared on her face as she walked, deepening with every block.
"How was Jonan's location discovered? Is he safe?"
She was about halfway back to the palace when she noted a cloaked and hooded figure walking parallel to her on the opposite side of the street, pacing her. There were plenty of other civilians around, but the hood made the man stand out. It was far too warm of weather for such a thing to be necessary. Lydia turned left at the next intersection, deviating from the path toward the palace. As she had anticipated, the figure turned as well. She noted the figure's height, build, and finally, the glint of glass from the front of his hood, before she rolled her eyes and crossed the street to meet him.
"If you're going to follow someone, you might try being a bit more subtle about it, Jonan," she chastised him.
"I am aghast at your accusation," he said, putting his hand to his chest in mock offense.
I am a veritable paragon of subtlety. For a moment, I was worried that you might have been killed. But I can see you're just the same as usual, Lydia remarked.
She smiled in spite of herself, feeling a hint of her tension dissipate as they continued to walk.